Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. LegalShield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? LegalShield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Welcome to Ruthie's Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to an evening with Ruthie Rogers and Martha Stewart on the River Cafe Lookbook for Ruthie's Table 4 podcast. Award-winning chef and best-selling cookbook author Ruthie Rogers launched the River Cafe in London in 1987.
A week ago today, I was in New York with Martha Stewart doing a live podcast.
Martha Stewart is the founder of the first multi-channel lifestyle company.
About cooking, about magazines, about books, about each other and our careers in food.
Reaching more than 100 million devoted fans on a monthly basis through her magazines, television shows, books, and products for the home, Martha is a go-to source for the homemaker. Please join me in welcoming Ruthie and Martha.
Imagine for a moment you are Martha Stewart. It is 1992, and you're the most important woman in the world of food. You are beautiful, you're funny, and you say yourself that your best quality is your curiosity. So maybe it was that curiosity which made you drive 25 minutes from your hotel in London to a small restaurant in a warehouse on the Thames, which had opened just a few years before, run by two women whose only culinary experience was cooking for their families. Now imagine how these women, Rose Gray and Ruthie Rogers, felt when Martha Stewart booked a table for lunch. They were anxious, excited, and probably a bit overwhelmed. Today, being here together on this autumn day in New York means more to me than I can possibly say.
This is a long time ago. What, 19? When did I first come? 1992. That's. It seems like yesterday, but it actually was a long time ago. And I was a divorcee, and my first big trip to London after I got divorced and started my own company, I met men.
Oh,
really nice men. And I read in your book.
Cafe.
I read in your book who you're, and some of them are in that list. And it's really fun to see that. I looked online, you know. But people you're grateful to. But like I did not have an affair with Michael Caine, but I did have an affair with one of his best friends. And
Terry Donovan?
No, O'Neill.
Oh, Terry.
The photographer,
yeah.
Remember him?
Yeah,
he was great. And he sort of introduced me to the nice crowd in London.
Yeah. I have to say Michael's amazing.
Oh, I went to Michael Caine's house for the weekend.
Oh.
I had so much fun. It was a big house party.
Oh.
You know, and when I think about those days, I can't even believe that was me.
Yes,
because
it was,
but it was so much fun. but we ate at this restaurant that was so exquisite because there's two ladies dressed in their stiff white chef's jackets,
yeah.
And they looked really great, and they spoke really nicely to everyone, and the food was just delicious and really well presented. I just loved it. I loved it for the first moment that I walked into the restaurant.
And then you invited us to come on your TV show.
Yes, I did. Yep. We must post that segment tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have it still?
Of course. It's film. You film. All that stuff.
Okay. I'm still looking for the bed.
We have a big library.
Excuse me while I try to find a bed that Martha had an affair with. Really interesting.
It's so funny because I'm working on my 100th book, and I get this book in the mail called the River Cafe Lookbook, and I open it up and I say, "Oh shit, she beat me to it." And what I had already discussed with my editor what I wanted to do, and I wanted to make the food in the book. It's my 100 favorite recipes. I wanted to make the food look like art, and you've done it. So I can't do it. Now I have to think of a whole new idea for the photographer. No, but I really love the picture so much.
We took all the photographs of the finished dishes, and trying to do it step by step was patronizing, boring, and we just weren't very good at it. So we thought, you know, what would be a book that might inspire people to cook, and not necessarily just children, without intimidating them, but inspiring them to cook. And it has a kind of backstory, this book, which is to do with someone bought me these books for people who have had brain damage or autism or anything connected with neurology. And it's I'll just show you very quickly. It's about pairing images. And so we thought what we would do is do a book in which you just had images next to each other. So why is looking at a vase of wilting tulips something that connects you with spaghetti vongole with red chilies? And why would burnt matches somehow mean something to you with lamb chops? There's something that stops you. And so what we did was we had the photographer do all the food photographs, Matthew Donaldson. And then we didn't commission these photographs. We went through his archives. And so we went through the archives and we found photographs that we thought we could possibly match with the cooked food. And then we put the recipes at the back and with kind of very Martha Stewart-like instructions, which is advice, which is to begin by reading a recipe twice, ending by now put on your apron and wash your hands. Anyway, this is what we did, and this is our book.
It was very nice production.
I said to someone who helps me, I said, can you go and get a book by Martha? Not one of the new ones, but just go and try and find a book. And they came back with housekeeping. Six things to do when you wake up in the morning. Do you know what they are? I know.
Yes.
Make your bed. Get rid of the clutter. This dates it because it says sort your mail, which I thought interesting.
Oh, I just sorted my mail this afternoon.
Oh, email.
Yep. No.
Get letters?
Mail.
Really?
I haven't had a letter. I get stacked this high of mail every day.
Oh, lucky you. I haven't had a letter. If anybody wants to write me
fan
a letter.
Fan mail.
Really? I'd love to sort it. Then I could have something to sort. I have nothing to sort.
And I have to sort through all that mail. I've sorted to Stephanie gets all the fan mail. We get a lot of fan mail. I mean, it's amazing where it comes from. And then the guy who pays all the bills, he gets all the bills. Don't you get bills?
No.
Oh, geez, you're lucky.
I think that housekeeping, if ever you've seen it, it is, when we've been reading it every night, when anybody comes to the house, it's about that.
Homekeeping handbook.
I love it.
It is the best
book. It tells
book.
You, there's, you know, and I thought, you know, and I was talking to a very young friend of mine, and I was telling him that a lot of us whose mothers perhaps really became involved in feminism, right, so in the maybe the 60s, really didn't want to teach us how to sew a button, you know, or clean a spill when it's fresh. Well, we know that, you know, it's easier. But I think that what Martha really did teach us that it's okay to do what we want to do, but also know how to do something domestic.
Oh, and I think it's very important.
I have to say it's a huge...
my friends don't know
part.
To use a squeegee in their showers.
What's a squeegee?
They don't know that. And then you get into their shower and it's all grungy, you know, and the glass looks all cloudy. If only you used a squeegee. My grandchildren use squeegees. You should see them. And they're beautiful showers. They're cleaning them, everything, you know.
Yeah.
Since they were one, they were using squeegees. But that book is great.
It's
a great
book.
Homekeeping Handbook is great.
Yeah.
And decorators, Michael Smith, who's the fanciest, schmanciest decorator on earth, he gives that book to his clients.
Yeah, which.
And they sit down and they read it so they can learn how to take care of those fancy houses that he designs for them. wish I could read my first Twitter recipes, because I was a really big fan of Twitter when it came out. I still have the original stock. I think I've gotten paid $54 a share, but I'm not sure. I haven't gotten any money yet from Elon. Let's see if he pays those debts. But I had so much fun writing those recipes. Try to do a recipe in 80 characters. It was really hard.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Help helps is a maxim I believe in. We all carry around stress and hardship, and when we keep it inside, it starts to chip away. Therapy is a safe place, and therapy is for everyone. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/Ruthie today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ruthie. BetterHelp.com/Ruthie.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. LegalShield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? LegalShield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
So, Martha, can you tell me about your family? Can you tell me about growing up in a household?
I grew up with Mom and Dad. Both.
Where was that?
In Nutley, New Jersey. Hmm. Mother was a school teacher. She taught sixth grade at the Washington School in Nutley, New Jersey. And she went back to teaching when she had her sixth child, right? When that sixth child, Laura, was old enough to go to kindergarten, my mother started teaching again. She took off, like, I think 18 years to have six kids. But she substituted during that time because she didn't like staying home that much.
What did
your father do? Dad was a pharmaceutical salesman. Mm-hmm. Like I said once, he was a drug salesman, and that's not exactly
not.
The right thing
maybe
to say.
Not, yeah.
But mother cooked every meal.
How did she do that?
She was organized. Mm-hmm. And Martha, I was the oldest daughter, so there was a brother, a daughter, and it was boy, girl, all the way down. And I learned how to cook at her side, and I would help, of course. Mm. But the kitchen was the hub of our home, and it was a really ugly kitchen. My father, he renovated the kitchen himself, and he put down pink linoleum squares on the floor, pink. And he put a bathroom, a little sink and toilet, right off the breakfast nook. We had a nook where we all sat with a big picture window looking out at the garden. And then he put birch cabinets, which were okay, except that he put very ugly hardware on them. And then pink formica countertops, which was not nice. And that's all one side of the kitchen. And one little oven, with a broiler in it, you know. Mm. This is for eight people.
Mm. What year would that be?
I guess that was the 1950s. Mm. That was the renovation of the 50s kitchen. It looked like a 50s kitchen.
How long did that last?
I bet it's still there. I haven't been inside the house. I've gone to visit the house since my mother sold it, but I'm sure it's still there. It was well built, but they must have put new counters in because that pink was hideous. But
you know, before we go back to your mom, I did a podcast with Alfonso Cuarón, the film director who did Roma, and it was very interesting because he talked about the difference between the American culture of the kind of middle class wealth or growth and the Mexican, and it also reminded me of Italy, that he said that in America, if you had more money, you had bigger kitchens, you had a huge fridge, you have two ovens, you'd have walk-in-ness, and you know, that's how you showed your wealth. And in Mexico, and I think probably in Italy, you could go to quite grand houses and have a very simple kitchen, really, really small, but you had more help. That was the way. Just had more domestic. So his whole, well, if you've seen Roma, it is about, you know, the life of the domestic. Whereas I think...
We had no domestics.
But you had no... Your mother had no help.
No, nothing.
So when was she shop? How did she work?
Well, we went shopping. It was Friday morning. Friday morning with Mr. Mouse from next door, this German baker from next door. And he had a big Buick.
What's his name? Mouse. Like M-A-U-S.
Mouse, yeah. And he was... he and his wife would take us, would drive us, because we only had one car and Dad took the car to work. So they would take us to the co-op. That's where we shopped and load up the car with a week's supply of groceries. And we also had a large garden. And so that was only, you know, during the warm weather, though, was the garden. And my mother did a lot of canning and preserving. We had a large freezer in the basement, a great big freezer. And we also had a large refrigerator in the basement where overflow was kept. Yeah. And when my brother wasn't skinning muskrats in the laundry sink, he was a trapper. He put himself through college on the fur that he trapped. Can you imagine? I was the best skinner, so I did a lot of the skinning.
I can't imagine that.
I skinned muskrats. They were dead by the time I got them, thank God. And I didn't have to kill them.
Once you learn how to skin a muskrat, do you learn that for life? Is that something you do
you never
now?
Forget. I'm really good. I'm really good at killing the chickens and the geese and all of that stuff. Yeah.
So you grew up in this house, so it's not a surprise that you taught everybody how to change a light bulb and how to make a bed.
I did all that stuff. I'm still not very good at plumbing, and I'm not very good at electricity, but I can do all the other stuff.
Yeah. So tell me more about growing up in the...
It was a fun house, you know, because like the old Polish joke, where what's a Polish vacation? Do you know what that is? Mm-hmm. And please don't take this badly. I'm not bigoted. I am Polish 100%. Yeah. It's sitting on your neighbor's stoop. And that's a vacation. Yeah. And that's what we did. We sat next door on the Italian stoop, or we sat next door on the Irish stoop. And we ate everybody's food. It was a very nice neighborhood. Yeah. And I learned a lot. I learned how to roast the potato the best way. You know, that was important to know how to do that. And I also learned how to make beautiful, beautiful yeast spreads from Mr. Mouse in his basement. Mm. He had a big bakery down in his basement. And I still have his bread-making bowl, the big yellowware bowl, in which I made all my dough. And for Thanksgiving, I'm giving my whole staff, I'm giving them all panettone, which is a recipe that I learned from Mr. Mouse a long time ago. And it's good.
So if you had all that background, which does really explain a lot, I didn't know that, because there were a lot of people who grew up without any of that knowledge.
Oh, we fished. We went fishing.
Yeah.
And would bring home 100 bluefish.
Yeah.
And we would freeze those bluefish, and we would eat bluefish for a lot of bluefish. I like bluefish, actually. Okay. And we would also, we had farmer relatives in southern New Jersey that had cows and grew corn, really good corn. Being a Polish background, you learn a lot about agriculture, and you learn a lot about cooking and preserving.
And every night you'd sit all eight of us together.
Yes, but dinner was important.
Yeah.
And conversation at the dinner was important.
And what would that be like?
Oh, everything from current events to what was on the Shadow Nose.
What's a Shadow Nose?
That's a radio program. Oh. We had a radio, but not a television. We were the last family on the street to get a television. Yeah. We would have to sneak out and visit our neighbors to watch TV.
When I interviewed Nancy Pelosi, she said she'd never sat down to a meal without a tablecloth.
Oh, well, we sat down to a pink Formica table in the nook of the kitchen nook. It was called the breakfast nook, but it was a large enough table for 8 people.
And who did the dishes afterwards?
And
you did?
Yes, I did the dishes.
What about your homework?
And the homework was at the kitchen table.
Right.
And Mom would sit there with her one cigarette. Oh, yeah. She was so sexy. She sat there. And after dinner, after everybody was in bed except for Martha, who was cleaning up, and I was also sewing a lot, too, because I made my own clothes, Mom would sit.
Do we believe this?
Yes, it's true.
Do we believe
this? Ask my sisters. And my mother would sit there with one cigarette, her Chesterfield cigarette in her fingers, and I loved how she looked. Wow. I thought it was the greatest.
You smoked?
I never smoked, no. No, but that was only one a day.
Did your father cook?
Dad made breakfasts, but he would make eggs with smiley faces made out of maraschino cherries and green peppers, lips, you know, to lure us down to the kitchen, and he had an intercom in the house. If you ever read Cheaper by the Dozen, it was a fabulous book about a father who had 12 children, and it was written in, like, Montclair, New Jersey. And Dad would make believe he was that father. Right. And
well, what about the intercom?
The intercom is, "Rise and shine." I still remember that. I'm not allowed to say that in my house at all. Rise and shine.
So then the early years.
I'm getting silly. This is very silly because it is, but it is a childhood of based on really good food.
Yeah, that's what is interesting.
I mean, we were brought up on fresh, good food.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this was life in the house.
In the suburbs, in the burbs.
What was your name before? What was it?
Martha Costira.
Costira. Yes. But do you think they were, did you have a grandmother?
Oh, yeah, I had two grandmothers.
Just one of the other things. Was she important?
Well, Grandma Helen lived down the street. So she was, and she made the best gefilte fish.
Oh.
She would bring home the giant carp that would sit in the bathtub.
In the bathtub? My grandmother
yes, of course,
the carp
bathtub.
In the bathtub. Mel Brooks has a lot of early mousse of carp
that was the turned out to be the gefilte fish with a wonderful sauce. She was great. And
what about the other grandmother?
The other grandmother, Grandma Roskowski, lived in Buffalo, New York. And she lived next door to a slaughterhouse. So I got to see how animals were slaughtered early on. We would peek through the wooden fence and see the cows coming in and all of that. But I learned a lot about how to treat animals and how not to treat animals. And also she would go to the farms up in New York State near Buffalo and bring home the most beautiful golden cherries and she would do all canning because they didn't have freezers. But they did, she did
canning
amazing.
Was a big thing, right?
Oh yeah, it was incredible. I learned how to be a good canner from her.
How do you be a good canner?
Well, the preparation and the sterilization of the jars and making sure everything is impeccable and so that we won't get sick eating, you know, tainted food. And that was impressed on us a lot about how it
was. Your grandparents born in Poland?
Yes, all of them.
So
yes.
They brought that with them?
Yeah.
So that was what it was growing up in that household.
Yeah.
And then when you left, did you miss that? Was that what? Did
not
you,
at all.
No. No.
Not at all. Because I got married when I was 19. I fell in love at 18 and got married as quickly as I could possibly get married and get out of the house and start my own house. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. And I cooked everything all the time.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. And dinner parties galore.
Did your husband cook?
No. No, he didn't, but he liked to eat.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
With a large family and the kind of life you had, I think I might know the answer to this question, but did you go to restaurants?
No.
No.
No, we had no money to go to restaurants. Six kids, all preparing to go to college. There was no time. My big treat for my dad loved good food, and he went to restaurants because he would be, take his, you know, doctors out that he was selling drugs to, whatever. So he got to experiment and visit restaurants in New York City. But he would bring me home like a pomegranate from Chinatown.
Mm. And so when did you start going to restaurants then?
Well, as soon as I could get to work, I went to work, seriously. Probably when I was around 13, I started to model. in New York City. A girl across the street was a model and a ballerina in New York. And she said, Martha, you should really come see my agent. She'd love you. And so I went to see this lady, Eileen Ford. And she accepted me as a kind of a...
13. Part-time
model. So I would work after school, and on Saturdays I would work maybe modeling live at Bonwit Teller. It was fun, and you know, it was like instead of 50 cents an hour, I was making more like $20 an hour in New York, and that was a lot of money. And then I got some TV commercials, and that's what really paid. It paid for my entire college education, the residuals in those days. It was very lucrative. So I did that until I went to Barnard College.
Is that when you started eating out?
Oh, yes, and boyfriends. You know, would take boyfriends me out to dinner. We would have nice dinners, different places. I remember going
what
to...
What was it like, New York?
One of my boyfriends, the guy I actually married, lived in the Ritz Tower, and the Ritz Tower on Park Avenue and 57th mm-hmm. Street had the Pavillon downstairs.
Oh, the Pavillon.
That was his lunchroom.
Yeah.
And breakfast was sent up to his apartment, and dinner if you wanted to, but we ate in the Pavillon. That was very nice. And... there were other lovely French restaurants to eat at. There was only one Japanese restaurant that I remember downtown on like 56th Street. But I ate at a Japanese restaurant uptown on 120th Street in Amsterdam called Aki. That was very good. So I started to experiment with all different cuisines early on. As soon as I could, I started to eat unusual foods.
I think that also is when you can pay for your own meal, when you can go out to a restaurant, is a kind of almost a measure of your success, isn't it? That you know that you
it's better
if
the boyfriend paid, but it was...
But it is very different now, right? But did you take your children out to restaurants
when
they were little?
Oh, they love to go out to restaurants.
Yeah.
They love fine food.
Your kids, your grandchildren.
Yes, but especially Japanese food. They have very, very good taste.
Do you ever order in?
I have never ordered
in. No, nor have I.
Never. I just don't do that.
And I think it's
and
so...
During COVID, I think there was a pizza one night that somebody ordered in. But I cooked for the first 100 days of COVID. I cooked for... I kept three people in my house with me. I kept my head gardener, Ryan. He's not bad to have around. And I kept my driver, Carlos, and I kept my housekeeper, Elvira, and I cooked for them all meals, and we actually had a lovely time.
Yeah. I don't think it's bad. When I say I don't order in, I don't sort of judge it, because I see my kids do. My kids do.
Oh, when I go into a restaurant and see the takeout that's lined up on the counters.
Yeah, maybe.
It's just not my habit to order in.
Yeah, me neither. But I think that your mother probably hasn't, has she? Have any of your mothers, do you think, it might be really generational, because it is, but it goes back to your mother. It is really hard to work all day, or as many people we know, work the night shift, or have to go to work. You know, the image that we all have that everybody should sit down and eat a home-cooked meal. It's really hard.
It is.
Really hard. And I think judging women who don't do it isn't fair.
And I admire the people who do go home and put a good meal on the table.
Yeah. And also respect the ones who can't. I do, you know, because I think maybe you'd prefer to do homework with your kid than cook a meal. Or maybe, as I said, you have to leave at 5 to go work at Amazon. Or, you know, it's a tough world out there. So going back, and so you went to Barnard, you got married, and then when did the... thought of actually all the knowledge that you had from your mother and from your past and your experience, when did that come into the idea of actually do that full time?
Oh, that took a while because I took some detours, like to Wall Street. I learned how to become a stockbroker, and I traveled a lot and tasted foods all over the world and fell in love with different cuisines. And tried to learn how to make those things. That was all more hobby than profession. And then I was already 40 when I wrote my first book. So I was old by the time I wrote my first book.
I was 38 when I started River Cafe. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're late bloomers.
Kind of women,
your gynecologist would call you a late bloomer.
A late bloomer. Okay. I think they called me a late bloomer probably when I was 18. Anyway, so there's like 14. But I think that. It is interesting how the two of us, you know, I didn't go to cooking school, and I certainly didn't have the background that you had.
And I have been maligned for not having gone to cooking school, and I have been maligned for not knowing how to do this or do that. But my best teachers...
Have you been maligned for that?
Maligned like crazy.
Why?
But, well,
for what?
You know,
giving just, advice and not having.
Yeah, just because I didn't have a culinary education. I didn't work in a restaurant.
Do you think it was also very male at that time?
Oh, it was very male, but I don't want to get into that stuff because I don't hold any grudges.
It's not a grudge,
except,
but it's a fact, except, isn't it?
Yes, it's a fact. Yeah, it was kind of crazy because I learn from watching. I'm a really good observer, and I have had the opportunity in my career with the TV shows to have the finest chefs in the world cooking with me. And Nobu even gave me a sushi jacket because he thought I did very well with the sushi knife and the fish. He let me cut sushi behind his bar on 57th Street. And that's pretty high praise. But that's the kind of thing I like to learn from watching and learning with the finest of the finest chefs in the world.
So what happened when you were 40? What was the actual
I decided I would write a book, and I was doing a lot of catering.
So you had been catering?
Yes, oh yeah.
When did that start?
That started in my mid-30s.
You just, how did that start?
That I retired from Wall Street.
Okay.
And I had to do something, so I started a catering business, which probably I should have stayed in Wall Street and, you know, run General Electric or something. But
why did you say that?
No, just in retrospect, it would be sort of fun. But our move to Silicon Valley.
Catering is so hard, isn't it?
Catering is the worst job on earth. And it's sort of like being a stockbroker. All you're doing is paying attention to an individual at a specific time.
Yeah.
And it's all about money and getting the stuff done on time.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty horrible business. Yeah. But you're building a restaurant every night and tearing it down at the end of the evening and loading it into the car. And I knew my marriage was over the night I drove back into the driveway on Turkey Hill Road, and nobody came out to help.
Oh.
That was, I knew it was over.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what happened because I was devoted to the work.
Yeah.
And then that's when I started thinking, what can I do to make something that my children, my grandchildren and grandchildren might know their grandma for. And that was to write a book.
What was the first
Entertaining.
Book? Entertaining.
Yeah, that nice book.
It was a really nice book.
So that was published in 1982. It's 40 years old this year.
Yeah,
40 years old.
Food is alleviating hunger, food is political, it's also comfort. And so my last question to you, my darling woman, is when you need comfort, is there a food you turn to?
Probably the bowl of eggs in my kitchen.
Eggs. How would they?
Well, I raise my own chickens and I raise my own eggs, and the eggs are so delicious.
Mm.
And no matter how you cook them, they're good.
Okay, well, seeing you today is a comfort, Martha Stewart. Thank you.
So great to see you,
too,
after this talk.
The River Cafe Lookbook is now available in bookshops and online. It has over 100 recipes beautifully illustrated with photographs from the renowned photographer Matthew Donaldson. The book has 50 delicious and easy-to-prepare recipes, including a host of River Cafe classics that have been specially adapted for new cooks. The River Cafe Lookbook, recipes for cooks of all ages. Ruthie's Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.